Welcome to Torati Mechanach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Adina Schmidman. Join us for meaningful and engaging virtual Siyum programming to celebrate the completion of Sifrei Nevi'im and begin Sifrei Ksuvim with Tehillim. Tuesday, February 11th, travel with Ms. Rivi Frankel to fortified cities in Eretz Yisrael, capitalizing on every opportunity. Thursday, February 13th, understand the relevance of Avodah Zarah then and now with Mrs. Sivi Zuckerman. And next week, February 18th, begin Tehillim with Mrs. Rivka Siegel, accessing the power of Tehillim. All these programs will be taking place at 12 noon Eastern. You can also sign up for Siyum Be'iyun, an opportunity to learn and review the Sfarim we learned more deeply. Learn more and sign up at ouwomen.org/nach25. And now for today's perek.
Welcome to Torati Mecha, Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. Today we'll be studying Zechariah, Perek Yud Gimel, Chapter 13. So we're in middle of this last section of Zechariah, which is chapters 12 through 14, and it is describing a apocalyptic battle of the end of days. And we know that this is the same battle that we were discussing in chapter 12, because it's going to continue to use the words by Yom Hahu on that day. So in chapter 12, to review, what we saw was that it was a battle very similar to the Battle of Gog Magog, described by Yechezkel, and it was a battle of Kol Ha'amim, all the nations coming against Yehudah and Yerushalayim, and there was a mass, destruction of the other nations who are fighting them, and ultimately Yehudah and Yerushalayim survived. This week, we pick up, there'll be two major sections. First section will be describing really the end of false prophecy. And then the second section will be describing a cleansing process that we'll look at a little bit more carefully. Okay, Pasuk Aleph. Bayom Ahu, on that day, Yemakur niftach lebeit David uliyoshvei Yerushalayim lechatas ulinida. So on that day, again, there will be a fountain that will be opened to the house of David and also those who live in Jerusalem. That also sounds like those are the same people we were talking about who were just saved from this great war in chapter 12. And there will be a fountain, lechatat ulinida means to purify them. And these are the exact same words that are used for the paraduma, the red heifer, whose ashes are used also to purify. So the sense is that this water will be a purifying force. Water also is a purifying force. Water is the mikvah. There's a little bit of a question of whether this will be an actual fountain that people will literally cleanse in, or maybe it is a metaphor for the cleansing that actually will happen. Pasuk bet, how is this going to happen? Like it's now... What actually is going to happen? Pasuk bet bayaba yomahu neum Hashem tzvakot on that day. So says Hashem, achrit et shmota atzabi min haaretz. I will destroy the names of all the idolatry from the earth. And it's not just that they will be destroyed. When it says it destroy their names, it's like that no one will even remember the idolatry that was served. Velo yizkru od gamet hanevi'im betruach hatuma avir min haaretz. And also we won't remember all of the prophets and the spirit of impurity, Hashem says, again, I will take that away from the land. Now, it's interesting that we've seen, I think you've seen this in a lot of the other, in the Yirmiyahu, the Nevi'e Sheker, the false prophets, when you read about them in Tanakh, they're often just called by this generic name, Navi, prophet, and we have to figure out from the context whether this is a Navi Sheker. So certainly the pshat of this pasuk is that the names, right, in the context of of wiping out all the names of the different idolatry, also will be wiped out the names of the false prophets. These are the prophets that are trying to get the people to worship idolatry. The Malbim, by the way, it's interesting. The Malbim is a commentary from the 1800s, actually ties it into some sort of what he calls some modern idolatry. And he says, this applies to what's coming out of India, or like false prophecies from the Quran. It's just interesting, very like kind of writing it to the people of his day. But there is a, I would say, non-pshat interpretation, not a simple explanation, not simple in sense of being the most straightforward translation of the words and the context, but that says V'lo yizkru od gametan nevi'im is alluding to that in this time period, the period of Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi, who are the early prophets of the Second Temple period, and they are also the last prophets of the Second Temple period. So Lo Yizkru Od Gamat HaNeviim could also be referring to the fact that prophecy is going to cease. And it ends with that, and it's in that same pasuk where it talks about the death, really, of idolatry. And the Gemara, we know the Gemara talks about that these are the two things that happened in the Second Temple period. Nevuah ceased, and so did the temptation to do idolatry. Meaning, on the one hand, we didn't have this like very direct revelation from God. We had to find Hashem ourselves. But on the other hand, we also didn't have this pull towards paganism and, false idols or forces. Let's continue. Pasuk Gimel, V'haya kina be'ish od. And when a person tries to give a prophecy, and again, we're assuming here from the context, it's a false prophecy, and you'll see from the pasuk that it's very clear, V'amru alav aviv imo yaldav, even his father or mother who gave birth to him will say, Lo tichya, you don't even deserve to live. Ki sheker dibarta b'shem Hashem, you are speaking falsehood in the name of Hashem. V'dakruhu avihu v'imo yaldav b'hinabo. And it stresses again, yaldav, even his parents will try to harm him to stop him from as a punishment for giving this false prophecy. By the way, it could be also because of the waning of the prophecy, it'll also be very obvious now who is a false prophet because prophecy itself is waning. And also just to realize it's not necessarily a bad thing. On the one hand, yes, it is. We don't get the direct word of Hashem. How many times do we ask ourselves, we wish we had it? But it also means that we then have to find it and we have to search in the Torah. We have to, even this learning, Nachyomi, is trying to find the word of Hashem in our own lives. Pasuk Dalid, Bahaya Bayomahu, Yevoshu Hanavim, Ish Michazuno Behinabto. People will then, the Nevi'im themselves, it's not just that they will be destroyed, but the Nevi'im themselves will be embarrassed to give a prophecy, a false prophecy. And it's just what, we know from the times of the late first Beit HaMikdash, and it seems also it was also happening in the beginning of the Second Temple, that it was very popular to give a false prophecy. No longer is that going to be popular, so much so that the prophets themselves, the false prophets, would be embarrassed to do it. The end of the pasuk is actually interesting. The words are very interesting. V'lo yilbashu aderet se'ar l'man kachesh. No longer will they wear like a cloak of hair in order to deceive, in order to give that false prophecy. So it seems that there was some kind of cape, maybe, that the prophets would wear in order to kind of convince people that it was a false, that they were giving prophecy. And this definitely seems to be an allusion to Eliyahu Hanavi, who is described as wearing an aderet, wearing a cape. That was how he gave his prophecy. He even uses it to do a number of miraculous things. So it could be that this was kind of the way that people would try to authenticate their prophecy by connecting to a very well-known prophet. Interestingly, though, these words aderet se'ar come up earlier in Tanakh about Esav, right? Esav came out as Kulo Aderet Seyar. He was covered almost like in a cloak of hair, and that's why they gave him the name Esav. Now, when Yaakov dresses up in order to pretend that he's Esav, he puts on a hairy cloak in order to imitate Esav. And what he's doing there is kachesh. He's giving he's falsely telling his father that he is Esav when he's actually Yaakov. So it could be a little bit of a play on the Yaakov-Esav story that Yaakov dressed up in Aderet Seyar in order to deceive, so no longer will the Aderet Seyar be a method of deception. And in Pasuk Hey, Va'amar, Nevi'im, these prophets will try to defend themselves. Lo Navi Anochi, I'm not a prophet. Ish Oved Adama Anochi. No, I'm a farmer, right? I was always a farmer. I was a farmer from my youth. Va'amar Elav, Mahamakod ha'ela ben yadecha, right? Why do you have all these sores on your back? And it seems like these sores came from some kind of pagan ceremony that the false prophets would do. It was a method of idolatry. We know that also, by the way, back to the Eliyahu story, when Eliyahu was trying to, when he had his face off with the Nevi'i Baal, the prophets of Baal, idolatry, one of the things that they did to try to, when he told, okay, let's each try to bring a korban, let's see what happens. One of the things that they tried to do to get the fire to come down was they scratched themselves. It seems that this was a practice. So now the people who deny that they were false prophets, all of a sudden, people are going to turn to them and say, well, wait, you're wearing the evidence. What are all these scratches? And they'll say, no. This is from beatings from the house of those who love me. Okay, now the second half of the parak, which it's a very short parak, this is only three more psukim, talks about something else. And this is a very intense part of the nevuah. And it says, cherev uri al ro'i. Okay, by the way, just notice like kind of the language, the Lashon Nofel HaLashon, how these words kind of fall on each other. And it's saying, Cherev, sword, rise yourself against my shepherd, Val Gever Amiti, Ne'um Hashem Tzvakot, and against the person who, the man who is in charge of my flocks. Hach et Haro'eh, hit, what should the sword do? Strike the shepherd, the Tafut Sena Hatzon, and then the flocks, the sheep, will be able to scatter. V'hashivosi yadi al hatzoarim, and then I will also turn my hand against all the like all those shepherd boys. They will be punished as well. So it seems like again those flocks are referring to Hashem's nation, to Bnei Israel. Who are the ro'im? It could be, you know, similar to how we saw when we saw the prophecy about the shepherds against the evil shepherds. It does seem in it was chapter 11, it does seem like it's going back to that when Hashem prophesies that he will destroy the evil shepherd who is leading the Tzon Ha'arega, the sheep that is going to the slaughter, that this could be that same sense. The ro'im are the leaders, which we could interpret as Jewish leaders in that in this context. It actually seems like also it could be in the commentaries they talk about also leaders like that they were subjugated to, meaning the Babylonians, the Persians, these shepherds will be destroyed. Pasuk Chet, Vahaya b'chol ha'aretz ne'um Hashem, pi shnayim, b'yikartu yigav'u, v'hashlishit yivaterba. So then we have this very kind of terrifying prophecy where Hashem says that in two-thirds of the in the land, Pishnayim is two-thirds. Two-thirds will die, and only one-third, Yivater, will survive. And there's most of the medieval Parshanim and the later ones as well, like Malbim, also, you know, and all the classic Mefarshim like Rashi, Ibn Ezra, Radak, assume here that the two-thirds is referring to all these nations that were attacking Yudan Yushalayim, meaning, right, we go back to that parak before where we're talking about this great war, that this is perhaps explaining that two-thirds will be destroyed, two-thirds out of the other nations, so that this is not talking about Bnei Israel. But I also think it is possible for it to be referring to Bnei Israel. I'll read the next pasuk, and then we'll talk about that possibility. Pasuk tet, v'haveti et hashlishit ba'esh. So Hashem says then, I will take that third, the third that I didn't destroy, utzaraftim, and I will cleanse it, I will purify it. Kitzrofet ha-kesef, the way that you would do that with silver, u'bichantim kibchonet hazahav, and the way that you would do that with gold, you would purify gold and silver. So that one third that's left will then go through a purification process. Hu yikra b'shmi ba'ani adne oto. That, well, actually, before I read the rest of the pasuk, let's leave that so that we can end with something positive. This one third will be cleansed. Now, it's interesting, in Yeshayahu chapter 6, there's a discussion of what will happen to Am Yisrael, and it does talk about that there will be only one-tenth, that there will be this cleansing process, one-tenth will survive, also allusions of metaphors of fire, and then from that one-tenth, Hashem will rebuild. So I think it is, there are different ways to read this group of psukim, either that the two-thirds that will be destroyed are coming from the world as a whole, or it is possible that these two-thirds were coming from the people, the Jewish people, and that only one third was going to survive. But also we have this piece that, you know, even leaving Mitzrayim, that it was not everybody who merited to leave. So there's definitely precedent for that idea. This one third then will be cleansed. And then there's the rebuilding of the relationship with Hashem. Once they're cleansed, Hu yikrab shmi, he will call out in my name, va'ani e'ene oto, and I, Hashem, will answer him. It reminds me of the pasuk in Ashrei, karov Hashem l'chol karav, Hashem is close to anyone who calls to him, l'chol asher yikru be'emet, to anyone who calls him in truth. You have that sense here in this piece. And then it closes, Amarti Amihu, I, Hashem, will say, you are my nation. He is my nation. I reclaim you. Behu Yomar, and he will say, Hashem Elokai. He will say, Hashem is my God. Thank you for studying together. Le'iloi Nishmat Gilbert Karsenti Menachem Mendel Ben Saud.